Station. Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
You say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh God, I'm so sorry, I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
That's the first time this year that having that cut in the open is actually appropriate because, it is the bye week for Alabama and Auburn and LSU and the Titans, and so you would think it'd be quiet, but of course it's not because there's so much going on in the world of sports right now. It's just the way it is. We do have a Friday trifecta going on because we will be off tomorrow for the T-Mac wedding, and we did beat the big dog a little bit earlier. And if you miss Lee Sterling, I know we've been having a problem with one of our signals. If you missed Lee Sterling earlier, we are going to replay that in its entirety at 5 o'clock. So stay loose for that. Joining us now, though, Matt Scalise on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline. Matt, of course, with AL.com. Matt, welcome in. How are you?
Doing well.
We've spent some time this week, or especially today, on the Bruce Maxwell story, because this is a salacious thing. And a very negative thing to say that shows the city of Huntsville in particular and the state of Alabama in general in a very negative way. And of course, it got picked up all over the country and run with it. Now there are a lot of holes in the story, and most people, you know, with a brain think that he and the councilman are probably lying about the way this whole thing went down. How, from your standpoint, from a media standpoint, the first story comes out, how difficult is it to make sure that the rest of the story, if there is a rest of the story, also gets the same amount of play? Because I've seen a lot more about the original story than I am about the fact that, you know, this kid is maybe telling a little bit of a fib here.
Well, I mean, that's a problem we come across a lot. And, mm-hmm. I think that part of what you have to try to do is keep reporting with the same level of intensity. Now, as far as getting the audience to pay attention, that's not something that's totally in the media's control, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think the best thing you can do is use the same platform that got the first story so much attention. And hopefully the same principles will apply and people notice it and pay attention. You follow up, make sure that people have a good chance to see the additional information that's coming out about this kind of stuff. And, you know, it is tough. It's tough when a story breaks and, there is initially some information that doesn't tell the whole story. I think the best thing you can do, again, is just try to keep reporting with the same amount of diligence that you reported the original story. But you can't totally put the genie back in the bottle. I mean, it's just kind of the nature of how information moves these days.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, that the reader, the interpreter of it, has got to decide whether or not that's as good a story as the original story. You know, the original headline looks real good, and then, you know, well, you know, is it, you know, it doesn't fit the narrative, and then it changes a little bit. And it's funny to me how much, again, interaction between athletes and media and kind of like a revisionist history thing going on. Cam Newton walking off the other day in a press conference. And then the statement that the team puts out that said that Cam didn't intend to be discourteous. In his mind, after answering questions for 9 minutes, he had fulfilled his obligation. It was obvious he was walking off in the middle of the thing. He said next question and then just walked off. I mean, that's not the way an athlete interacts with the media. And yet he gets cover from the team. I mean, I don't understand that.
Well, I think Carolina's having a hard time figuring out the right way to deal with Cam. I think he's honestly seems a bit out of control at this point. And he's costing himself with the public. He's probably going to cost himself money. I mean, we know he already has cost himself some money with a sponsorship with an earlier incident. He seems like a guy who has a hard time controlling his impulses. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of armchair psychologists who want to figure out what's going on here. My opinion has always been that I think there's a lot going on with Cam, but I think that it certainly didn't help that in the entirety of his career at Auburn, he was never really given the opportunity, I would say, to go through normal processes that a star athlete goes through of learning how to deal with the media. Mm-hmm. Because Auburn was dealing with a scandal basically the entire time Cam was on campus, and they never put him in front of the media. They protected him from that. And I think that sort of may have set him down a path where he has a difficult time dealing with media, answering difficult questions, dealing with scrutiny. Those things are not something that come naturally to him. And, you know, it really is becoming a problem, I think, for the franchise that, you know, in the NFL especially, you build your brand around your star players. And there's no bigger player for Carolina than Cam. It's a huge company. There's a lot of money at stake. And they can't really predict his behavior. And it's going to continue to be a problem, I think, as long as his behavior is unpredictable.
Yeah, and then from us as the consumers, you know, we're always caught in this, boy, I wish these athletes would get more training as to how to handle the media and so on. And the old coach of me says, you know, this is the way you handle saying nothing while saying something. But on the other hand, we don't want automons. We don't want that out of our athletes. We want honesty. We want them to be, you know, blunt with us and so on and so forth. So it's kind of that fine edge we walk. Sometimes we crucify guys for being real, and then other times we crucify them for being phony. But I think you can be courteous. Even if he didn't want to answer that particular question, he could have gone ahead and said, you know, that's not an issue, next question, and continued to stand there. You know what I mean? It's like there's that fine line between being a total ass and then being somebody that's boring.
There's definitely a line. I do think that if you want to talk specifics, this particular incident is very strange to me. I don't know the history between Cam and this particular reporter, but I listened to the question, and it doesn't even sound like a controversial question. It sounds like kind of a layup. It's an easy one to answer. You know, the guy's basically saying, you know, are you expecting for this offense to continue to struggle, or do you think you guys have what it takes to overcome it? He's setting up the quarterback, basically come out and say, hey, I believe in my team. I believe in our offense. We're going to get this figured out. But Cam seemed to be really offended by it. I don't know if he misunderstood the question. I don't know if there's something going on that we don't know about. But it was a very strange response to what seemed to me like kind of a layup question.
Yeah, it didn't. It seemed like an innocuous question. For sure, Matt Scalise with us, AL.com. All right, then we'll continue down this same path. We get Jim McElwain this week talking about death threats for players, students, children. That's what they are. They're children. I know we look at them as grown men, but they're children. And himself and his family. Yet, no reports, don't want to talk about it. His bosses ask him about it. He's got no details. I mean, how could these people say stuff like this? This is a grown man saying stuff like this without thinking that somebody's going to look into it and say, whoa, what death threat? What are you talking about? And, you know, it's amazing. And that thing, it's starting to come apart at the wheels there. I mean, this is good. This is, feels like the beginning of the end for that guy.
Yeah, I have to say this is a pretty bizarre thing that's going on. And I don't understand what's happening. I think that it probably, like a lot of these things, I think it was probably a story that started with a misunderstanding and started, you know, cascading. and got a little bit out of control and got a little out of the hands of the people involved in it. And that can be difficult to solve, and it can be embarrassing for everybody involved. But, man, you know, if you don't set the record straight on a misunderstanding right away, this is kind of what can happen. This is what this concern is. I think that Jim McElwain especially has always seemed uncomfortable at Florida. I think he's a good coach, and I think he's accomplished a pretty good amount there already. But, you know, he's got an obvious advantage so far, which is that I think he's not a particularly good recruiter. That'll catch up with you really quickly in the SEC. I think he also seems to be kind of uncomfortable with the spotlight, and he hasn't grown into it very well. So it's very quickly developed into something that looks like a bad fit. And yeah, we'll see where it goes. You know, maybe they turn things around. But it does seem like things are worse off right now than they were a year ago and 2 years before that.
Yeah, he could have diffused it by simply saying, well, I overstated that, and that threats, but, you know, people who are unhappy, you know, with us, you know, that type of deal or something. But I don't know, it's almost like he's trying to grease his own skids to get out of there. A lot of crazy stuff going on between the media and the people that we cover, and but that is just that's the world that we live in right now. All right, man, appreciate you as always, Matt. Great stuff, and, you know, everybody gets back on the field next week, and we're getting ready for this stretch run. It's amazing that it's already that point where we're 4 weeks out from the SEC championship game. We got the stretch run coming up in the season already. We talk about it for 40 weeks, and it goes by like nothing.
And, you know, it really feels like the most important parts of the story are still ahead of us, at least for Alabama. So
no question.
I'm fascinated to see how this all turns out. It should be pretty exciting.
Yeah, and I got my email about the SEC championship game credentials yesterday. That's when it struck me. I was like, what? Why are you sending credentials out at the beginning of the season? Why are you sending out for credentials beginning of the season? And I realized that we're a month out from the championship game. That's just nuts. All right, man. Appreciate you. We'll talk next week.
Okay, see you.
All right, thanks. It's a true story, T-Mac. Yesterday, I got my credentials for the SEC championship game. I'm like, why now? I mean, geez, the season just started, right? Wasn't I just there for Alabama and Florida State? Didn't we just have that big weekend? Didn't Florida play Michigan like last week? I mean, Ohio State just got dumped by Oklahoma, didn't they? I mean, what are we doing? I got to get credentials already for the SEC championship game?
That was a simpler time.
Let me tell you something. Today is all about you getting married. That's how marriage will be, by the way. That's how marriage will be. You're walking down the aisle, and then in like 10 minutes, you're going to walk your daughter down the aisle. That's how it's going to be. And then it's going to be like a year later, and you're going to be talking about being an empty nester and, you know, how the retirement accounts are looking and how many, you know, people are coming over for Thanksgiving. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's like, I remember getting married like it was like a couple of years ago. Seriously, like it feels like a couple of years ago. I remember details about my wedding. Tarantella was played at my wedding by a band. And like it was yesterday. I remember the people in the reception line. You're going to have a reception line, right? You'll have a reception line where people come through.
Yeah.
I remember guys that were friends of my father that I had no idea who they were. They were at my wedding that came through the line with just thick envelopes. You know what I mean? They'd shake my hand and they'd slap a thick envelope in my hand. What do I know? I'm like, I don't know who these people are. I'm turning to my wife, like, who are all of these people that are your father's people? I said, I don't know who they are. I don't know. Anyway, like it was yesterday. All right, I'll tell you what. I have a hankering to keep this thing rolling through Mark Long, who's coming up next, and then leave us some room for calls in the final segment of the hour. And then we're also going to have the replay. For those of you that might have missed it, we're going to have the replay of Lee Sterling, because I know there's an issue with one of the signals. I don't know. I don't know if it's taken care of or not. I know our engineer is on it, but I think the AM maybe is having a little bit of a problem. I'm not sure. But we do have a Friday trifecta, so we'll reset that for you as well. If you want to go ahead and text it in, you can do that. Penn State plus 6.5 at Ohio State. The Fighting Cubes, NC State, plus 7.5 at Notre Dame. Florida plus 14.5 against Georgia in Jacksonville. And we're using a grumpy rule this week. Everybody who hits the trifecta gets a point. Just hit the trifecta, you get a point. We're going to start packing the board now as we get ready for the final month of the regular season. And, of course, we're taking this all the way through the championship games as well. If you want to talk about the insane baseball game last night, you can do that as well. If you're watching a World Series, I'd like to know from you on that. All right, we'll get a break. When we come back, let's go to Gainesville and find out if Jim McElwain is still riding the shark or what's going on here. It's Tom Abraham Show. Back with more after this on 730-1039 The Elm.
Yes, it's me and I'm in love again. Had no love and say you know when. You know I love you.
Fats yes, Domino getting the Throwback Thursday treatment today. Passed away earlier this week, 89 years old. He had 35 number one hits, top four. No, not number one hits, top 40 hits, I should say. He had 35 top 40 hits, a great performer though, from back in the day. And I remember as a little kid growing up in the 60s, hearing that Fats Domino stuff and Blueberry Hill and all of that good stuff. And, speaking of which, by the way, there's a saying that those of us that are old enough to remember the movie Happy Day or the show Happy Days remember, and that's jumping the shark. It's taken on a different meaning, certainly in Gainesville, and you wonder whether or not at this time that Jim McElwain may have jumped the shark more ways than one, because it's gotten kind of weird there. And look, when I was on in Florida, we would go to Gainesville every week, and I was obviously a lot closer to the situation that was going on there. And I always thought that McElwain would have great success there. And I mean, and he comes out of the chute and he goes wins the SEC East twice. He gets whacked in Atlanta, but that's just been the nature of it. I mean, it's better than not winning the SEC East. I mean, it's not the grease fire that they have in Knoxville. It's not what's been going on in Columbia. Or Lexington, where they never go. Yeah, it's none of those types of situations. At least they were winning the thing. Georgia didn't win it. It's been Florida. And they have been the ones that have gone. But now, between the suspensions and the way this whole season, the quarterback stuff, McElwain as the quarterback whisperer, all of that stuff has been called into question. And then you start getting the situations that we've seen now with the death threats. And I don't know who's buying in on that. I'm not sure who believes any of that stuff. Mark Long scheduled to join us here in a couple of moments. We had him and then lost him. Boys are efforting him again. Because, the game should be the thing. I mean, this is their big rivalry game. Now, they have the Florida State game. They're one of these teams that has two real big rivalry games that they point to. They have LSU, too. You never accuse Florida of playing a crap schedule because they play Florida State every year. But when you look at the game itself on the fundamentals of the game, I mean, Georgia comes in averaging 283 yards a game on the ground. That's 10th in the country. Well, Florida's not bad against the run. They're top third in the country at 47, but they allow 143 yards a game. And you say, well, styles make a fight. Well, Florida's pretty good against the pass, but Georgia doesn't really throw the ball much. They're only averaging 171 yards a game. They got it going against Missouri, but whether or not that's going to transfer over to the Florida game is a whole other thing. But when you flip it over, you look at Florida running the ball. They're 60th in the country, just under 169 yards a game. Well, this rushing defense of Georgia is fourth in the country. So the only thing that Florida can do offensively is run the ball a little bit. And they're going up against the fourth best rush defense in the country. And this is why a lot of people that look at Georgia, they look at it and say, this is a team that is definitely being built with the Alabama template. play great defense, stop the run, run the ball, throw it when you have to, take care of the football. And they've done a pretty decent job of taking care of the football as well. But they're, you know, Florida's passing offense, 182 yards a game. It's 100th in the country. They're going up against the number 11 pass defense. How is Florida going to throw the ball? How is Florida going to run the ball? How is Florida going to throw the ball? The 102nd ranked offense against the number 3 defense in the country. You tell me how they get that done. From a scoring defense standpoint, Georgia only allows 12.6 points a game. Well, Florida's 95th in the country at 23 points a game scored. It's just that, you know, styles make a fight. This is not good for Florida. That's why it looks like for the first time in a long, long time, you know, Georgia may win this one going away. If Florida figures out a way to dump Georgia here, man, Georgia fans are going to be like, what do we got to do? Can't get them. If you can't get them now, what are you going to do? How are you going to do it? All right, so we are waiting on Mark Long. And apparently we will have him here in just a second. We're going to get the phone lines open up again for your trifecta, too, when we're done with Mark. Penn State plus 6.5 at Ohio State. NC State plus 7.5 at Notre Dame. Florida plus 14.5 at Georgia. That's your trifecta. Mark Long joins us now. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Tom. Doing well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. You know, a great man once said
that, what the hell's going on out here?
What the hell is going on out here, man? I look at Gainesville a little bit further away than I used to be, but I look at Gainesville and I say, what the hell is going on out here? I mean, you know, the shark thing was one thing. Now we got death threats. I mean, what's going on over there?
Well, yeah, you got alleged death threats. Let's throw that out there.
Yeah.
Alleged death threats, old death threats. Not a lot of detail on death threats, and then the university now kind of hanging McElwain out to dry. Really, 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 Tom, is starting to look like they don't. This is not a marriage, you know, that they want to be part of anymore. Look, it really starting to look like McElwain wants out, and it definitely looks like Florida has grown tired of his antics. And you know, you start when something like this happens, the death threats and what happened Monday. It's just all it does is it pop opens the wormhole, and then you start looking deep into it, and you start seeing everything else, you know, and the whispers and the rumors and the everything comes to light, and you hear stories about him blowing off Steve Spurrier, who tried to help him with the offense.
Yeah.
You hear stories about him, you know, ripping the AD behind his back, that they can't, they just not on the same page. So when you start hearing all that, you start going, uh-oh. And then, you know, and then again, the you know, and then Florida comes out with that statement on Monday night that basically threw McElwain under the bus and said, listen, we went to this guy. He refused to help us. And, you know, we did our part. He hasn't done his.
You know, it's funny because we were just talking earlier. We're dealing with a similar type of story in Alabama where Bruce Maxwell, the catcher for the A's, claimed that when he came home to Huntsville, Alabama, he got denied service because he was the ball player who kneeled, and the waiter said, oh, I'm a Trump fan. I'm not going to serve you, and blah, blah, blah. And it turned out the whole story is a lie. I mean, we, you know, our news guy has had now the waiter and the councilman and everybody else that was there with him, and more is coming out that this is just a bold-faced lie. And what I don't understand, it's one thing when it's a 25-year-old ball player that's saying something like that, and I don't know how people think that things aren't going to be vetted. But when you're talking about a head football coach in the SEC and he uses the term death threats in these sensitive times, I mean, if you ever did get a death threat, isn't the first phone call to the administration, the police, somebody other than the media? You just blurt that out to the media? It just seems so irresponsible.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely irresponsible. And then, again, you've now opened that can of worms. You've got to either close it, or I think it's your right. I mean, it's your duty a little bit to provide some more insight. And if you don't want to give names and details, that's fine. But at least, you know, you should have been saying, you could have said, it was a team member or a coach's wife, and it was on Twitter or it was on Facebook or whatever. And he certainly should go and help the university. When your boss comes and says, you know, hey, what's going on? And you're blowing off the boss, essentially walking out of the room is what I'm understanding. Yeah. That, you know, it's just not the right way to handle it. And it's not a guy who seems to want to make this right or figure it out. And he kind of backtracked a little bit last night, offered a little bit of a mea culpa in terms of saying he was wrong to air that laundry. And he did give us a little timetable by saying it just happened in the last few days. It happened a while ago, and he's just kind of been venting and building up in him, and he let fly. But boy, he did a disservice to, well, did a disservice to his boss, did a disservice to the fans, because, you know, here he is painting some wackadoos out there. And he did a real disservice to the program, because you don't think every other program in the country is going to use this as a negative recruiting tool, then you haven't dealt with recruiting. This is this is going to be number one on everybody's list. Why would you want to go to Florida? Their fans, you know, give the coaches and players death threats. And if you don't believe me, here's the video of Matt Gawain saying it.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing how really similar this is to the story here in Alabama? Because you got the same thing where an entire state and a region is being disparaged by a guy just saying something, and that's what's happened here to the Florida fan base. And is it possible that after spending time in Tuscaloosa with Nick Saban, and now also being a head coach there and being there on campus for the better part of 3 years, that he would misinterpret some just general passion, pissed off fans, whatever you want to call it, as being death threats? Or do you think there was actually that term, somebody's going to get killed type term in there? Do you think it's a total lie, or do you think it's just a misinterpretation of what, you know, a typical, you know, lunatic fan might say?
I mean, I want to believe him, but he's been pretty unbelievable for 3 years in terms of a lot of things he said. So it does make you wonder whether he exaggerated or misspoke or whatever. But he's had so many chances to either backtrack or explain himself, and he's just refused at every turn. So, you know, maybe that's why. Maybe it is made up, and he doesn't want to – if he gives any more detail, now he gets caught in a lie. And so at that point, you don't want to get caught in a lie. You get caught in a lie, it looks worse. So maybe somebody's giving him some advice, agent, attorney, whatever, to say, hey, just it'll pass. It just stand your ground, kind of, you know, stick to your story and let it blow over eventually. And it will. There's no question it will eventually blow over. The question is, you know, is it created such a rift between administration and McElwain that it's irreparable? And is this a stink that might follow him wherever he ends up down the road? But he's 55 years old, and he's been coaching for 30 years. He's been at Alabama. He's been other places. You know, this is not his first rodeo. Surely he's dealt with this somewhere along the line, because this isn't new to football. I think what we're seeing now is certainly fans have more access to coaches and wives and players with social media, but that's, you know, we've had that around since 2007, 2008, so it's not like that's even new.
Matt Hayes wrote that, in his opinion, this was a fireable offense, and that he may have even given Florida an excuse to pull the trigger for a cause, which would, change the financial ramifications if they wanted to make a move. In your opinion, does it rise to something like that?
I think I saw Matt's story, and I love Matt to death. But I wonder if that's a little bit strong. I've looked at the contract, and I really don't see anything in the contract that would say, that says, you know, insubordination, if that's what you're going to try to term it, that insubordination would be, you know, cause for a reason to fire him with cause. It really, most of the things in there were NCAA violations related. So he's got some morality stuff in his contract. So I don't see this as that, but you know what? I mean, who knows? It could end up in court. The two sides could settle if it got to that. I don't know where it's going from here. I know this: if results on the field would make it a lot easier to keep him and a lot easier to fire him based on what they do these last last five games of the season.
Yeah, and yeah, that's, by the way, I went looking at what the buyout was. So I looked at that new chart that the USA Today put out there and saw that his buyout is $13 million. And I was like, my God, his buyout is $13 million. And then I was looking at these other ones. I can't believe that there's like 20-some-odd coaches that have buyouts that are over $20 million.
Clemson and Florida State, right?
Yeah, Jimbo's is at $39 million. Yeah. Clemson's is $40 million. I'm like, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Exactly. I mean, who's negotiating these deals? What's your buyout? I know my buyout's like my buyout is like a sandwich and a bag of string or so, a six pack. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I might get like a golf for a week or something.
Yeah, I mean, they would have to really be, I mean, like nobody knows how bad it is, the rift there. There's clearly a rift.
Yeah.
Because you don't send out that statement Monday without there being some other, you know, skeletons in the closet. So there's clearly a rift. The question is how big is it? And do they want to go down that road? Because, again, $13 million, it's a pretty big buyout. It's not as big as it could be, but it's still significant, especially for a program that's trying to raise $100 million right now to build a new standalone football facility and a new baseball facility, you know, a national championship baseball facility. So they've got all these projects in the works, and they're going to try to raise $50 million and bond $50 million. So I don't know how you just drop $13 million when you're trying to do that.
Mark Long with us from the AP in North Florida. All right. So then we look at and put our focus on the field. The thing is he's done something that six other teams in the East haven't done the last 2 years since he's been here. He's won the thing. I mean, they didn't win it in Athens. They don't go, you know, and then he made this comment, we were brought here to win, you know, division titles. Well, no, you weren't. You might want to be a little more competitive in those SEC championship games, but still, he's doing, I mean, it's Knoxville. Are you kidding me? They throw a parade, you know, for an SEC East championship if they could get something like that. So he's got that in his back pocket, but he's supposed to be the quarterback whisperer. And we look at this quarterback room seems to be a disaster. I don't know if he's taken a hit at all for the suspensions, but when you look at this game against Georgia, Styles make a fight, and the Styles don't look good here. Everything Florida does, Georgia does defensively better. And it looks like there's no reason for Georgia not to roll them here in a fashion of which they haven't done in probably 20 or 30 years because Florida's owned this series.
It looks like a big-time mismatch, and you know, who knows what Florida – I will give Florida credit for being in the fight despite – they were in the fight against LSU. They were in the fight against A&M late and lost both of those games by a combined 3 points. And to be where they're at injuries and suspension-wise, they're basically down 20 scholarship players, which is a fourth of your roster. Most teams, you know, don't compete very well with that number of – you know, down that number of scholarship players. So, you know, he's kept them in the fight. So there is that, and it is a rivalry game. Anything happens. I mean, I think I did the numbers on this thing, and in the last 30-plus years, there have been 12 upsets one way or another for this Florida-Georgia. So it's actually one of the most unpredictable rivalries in college football. And so you never know. But this one, man, this one definitely looks as much as any of the last two decades like it's going to be all Georgia.
And that's why if he does pull it off, you know, it would change. You know, that's how it is, though, in the SEC, how the narrative, and in college football, such a short season, look how much the narrative just changes week to week to week, right? I mean, you know, we're firing coaches 1 week, and then 2 weeks later after, that Orgeron, you know? I mean, he gets beat by Troy. We didn't even think he'd make it to Gainesville. And now
Kevin
it's
Sumlin.
Like, yeah, right, Sumlin, you know, and who, you know what? Gus Malzahn up here. Gus Malzahn. Sure. Came off the hot seat, everybody's happy, then they got whacked, and then they start thinking, well, wait a minute, if they don't beat A&M, then he's got Georgia and Alabama, he's going 7-5, he's out of here. You know, so it's week to week, and that's the way it's been for McElwain, and maybe he does want to get out and go back home. You know, there's going to be jobs opening up back in the Northwest. I mean, you know, maybe that's where he needs to be.
Yeah, I've said it repeatedly. We're missing something. There's some layer of this story that we're missing. And I say we, I mean everybody, unless, you know, maybe it's
his wife may be harassing him. Get out of here.
He has been absolutely almost despondent for much of the year since that Michigan loss to start the season to the point where we asked him 3 or 4 games later, hey, what's wrong? Well, why are you all bummed out? And so I don't know. I mean, the midlife crisis, who knows? He had one daughter got married and she just had his first grandchild last month, he had another daughter get married. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe there's something going on there. I don't know. But it sure seems like something is amiss in Gainesville, for sure.
Well, you know, we found out after the Sabins left Miami that Miss Terry, as they call her around these parts, absolutely hated Miami, and the kids hated the high school they were in and wanted to get out of there, and it was just it wasn't fun at home. And we don't know what Mom was saying. You know what I mean? I mean, we don't know how bad it is there. Urban Meyer, you know, you see these situations with coaches sometimes where maybe the family says this, you know, they're just miserable. And if the family is miserable at some point in time, the coach becomes miserable no matter how much money he's making. So maybe,
yeah,
you know,
no doubt. No doubt. But he's been a bachelor for the last month. All kids are raised and out of the house, and his wife went back to be with the baby, the grandchild. So he's been a bachelor in his 12,000 square foot home for about a month now. So
that'll make you miserable, though.
Most married guys would say, yeah, you know, that doesn't sound awful.
Well, unless he loves his wife, you know. I mean, if he loves his wife, maybe he's lonely, you know.
Well, you still love her and still like a little alone time.
Well, this is true, and that's all you got in coaching anyway. I mean, you know, by the time he gets home at night and leaves in the morning, he probably never sees her anyway. All right, so it's just an interesting thing as it develops down there, and the other part of it has been the recruiting, right? I mean, nobody's happy with the recruiting. It appears that he has not, you know, when he got Felipe Franks, people started thinking, and a couple of other guys, you started thinking that CC Jefferson, and start thinking, you know, this guy's got the juice. But it seems like now 3 years in, like recruiting is an issue, and that's the lifeblood of these teams.
Yeah, he turned a little bit of a corner in February and really closed strong and got some guys they didn't think they were going to get. And then it looks like it's picked up now. But here's the thing: well, most of these guys, you wonder if they're, you know, if they're still committed and going to change their mind in the next, you know, couple of weeks here, the next month and a half before that early signing date. But it hasn't been awful. It was bad his first 2 years, but it really, really picked up in February this year, and he ended up with a top 10 class nationally, number 10, actually. So, you know, it's not Georgia, Alabama good, but, you know, compared to everybody else, it's actually been pretty solid. His number one problem, again, you can't walk in the door and say, I think I can win games with my dog, Clarabelle, and then turn around and give us, you know, a dog crap offense for 3 years. And that's what he's done.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. All right, man. Appreciate you as always. It's good to talk to you again. Mark Long has been our guest from the AP in North Florida. Thanks. Hey, you're enjoying them Jags, aren't you? I mean, that's got to be a good feeling.
It's about time.
Will they fill out, even with the tarps on, if they play like this, will they start filling that place for games? I mean, like, if they're, you know, if they're a division contender here all the way to the end?
They will. They got to get past this anthem debacle, because that was not good for a military town. They're kneeling in London and then standing for God Save the Queen. They stood for that, but they knelt for the anthem. It just upset a lot of people locally, and they had a number of season ticket holders turn their season tickets in. So I think they'll show up when they start winning, keep winning, but it's going to also take some time to get past that.
Well, you know, Doug Marrone, he'll go 9-7 and then quit, you know. He'll look for a new deal. All right, man. Appreciate you, and we'll talk again.
All right. Thanks.
Mark Long, my guy in North Florida. All right, let's get a break. We'll come back with open lines next. Do you want a piece of this Friday trifecta? If you're just joining the show, yes, it's a Friday trifecta on a Thursday. Absolutely. The reason is we're off tomorrow because we have to get T-Mac ready for the wedding, okay? I got to finish making my wife's dress. I've got to get T-Mac a haircut. I have got to give him a little bit of a tutorial for the wedding. I'm just saying.
Did you say you were a barber and a seamstress?
I'm a barber and a seamstress, my friend. There are a lot of different things that you don't know about me that I'm able to do. So I've got to get all of these things done, you know, because it doesn't matter how many daddies you got.
I am the only daddy you got. I am the damn pedophilia.
I am the pedophilia. So, you know, I need to take care of my host duties here for this whole thing so that everything goes off fine. And by the way, you haven't sent me the vows yet. I'm supposed to review the vows. I was asked to review the vows, go through them, make sure that all the dots are, you know, all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed. Make sure everything is, you know, in there that's supposed to be in there. Till death do us part and all that other kind of stuff. Not till Oklahoma wins a national championship or anything like that. You know, we gotta make sure that the vows cover everything. You know what I mean? She's Auburn. You're Oklahoma.
Everything until, you know, Auburn beats Oklahoma.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you got to deal with that again.
There's like
you
a built-in trial separation stuff. Like
exactly.
That,
you know? Exactly. See, all of these potentialities have got to be covered, and you know, so it's like the movie "Love by the Dashboard" or like the song "Love by the Dashboard Lights." Was that Meatloaf? Did you ever hear that song? You ever listen to that song? That's not a good wedding song. "Love by the Dashboard Lights." The guy's trying to get busy. And the girl is saying, not till you tell me that you'll love me till the end of time. And he's like, you can't say it. And she says, well, if you want it, you got to say you love me till the end of time. So finally he said he can't take it anymore. So he says it, I'll love you till the end of time. And then at the end of the song, he said, so now I'm praying for the end of time.
Oh my God. So I was answering the phone. That's Meatloaf, right? You're talking about Meatloaf?
It's Meatloaf. Yeah. "Love by the Dashboard Lights." Go listen to it. It's pretty funny. Now I'm praying for the end of time.
I know what song you're talking about. My sister, growing up, my sister loved Meatloaf.
Yeah.
On both accounts, you know, the singer and the food.
Mom, Meatloaf! Not that Meatloaf. All right, I got to get a break. When we come back, phone lines are open. We got an update. We haven't even gotten an update yet today. And we got a bad injury from a former Tider as well, and I'm sure that's any update. All right, we'll come back. It's the Tom Abraham Show, 7:30, 103.9 The Amp.
Nice day for a white wedding. It's a nice day to...
Is that the way it's going to be, Cream? I just want to know. I need to be prepared, that's all. Because I got more vacation time, you know what I mean? I just need to be prepared. If I got to take more days off, just let me know because that freaks me out a little bit. You know what I mean? All right. No, I'm not the Canis Familia. That's not the Canis Familia. I'm the Pedophilia. That's what I am.
I am the only daddy you got. I am the damn Pedophilia.
The Pedophilia. It's the head of a Roman family. The oldest living male in a household is the pedophilia.
I think pedo has a different meaning nowadays, Big Dog.
I don't think
you want to be that.
It's not that. It's the pedophilia. Now, let me go to the lines, knock these calls out, see if we can get how many of these we can get in here quick. We'll have open lines at the top of the hour, too. Plus, at the top of the hour, we are going to play Lee Sterling because we understand that our AM signal was out for a little while and some people missed that, and it's 10 minutes of pure genius. Jay is in Athens. Jay, welcome to the show. How are you, man?
What's going on, Big Dog? You doing all right?
I am fantastic.
All right, first of all, help me out. Why was that not a first down on that defensive holding down on the goal line?
All right, because in college football, defensive holding is not an automatic first down. It's a 10-yard penalty, just like it is if it's offensive holding. But defensive holding on a running play, which is what that was. If he had put the ball up in the air, they would have called it. It would have been an automatic first down. But defensive holding on a running play is not an automatic first down. That's the NFL.
Okay.
Well, who knew?
We couldn't figure it out. Me and my father-in-law and people said, "Mom, we couldn't figure it out." So
that's the NFL rule.
All right, let me hit that trifecta right quick.
All right, we've got Penn State getting 6.5 at Ohio State.
Give me the Buckeyes.
You know what? I hate to do this, but I'll take the Buckeyes.
NC State getting 7.5 at Notre Dame.
Give me the Fighting Irish.
I don't know if you guys can hear that. That's Rudy. They're chanting Rudy. Florida State gets 14.5. At Georgia, or against Georgia in Jacksonville.
Give me the Bulldog.
Jordan!
It's Goldberg. All right, man. We got you in.
All right, brother. Appreciate you.
All right, thank you. Rick is in North Fort Myers. Rick, welcome to the show. How are you?
It's yourself.
I've been better if I'd have beaten you in the fantasy, but I guess I didn't, which is a nightmare for me.
Hey, somebody's got to take down the dog father.
Yeah, you did take down the dog father. All right, listen, Rick, stay there.
No.
Don't go anywhere. Okay. Stay there. Because they're going to play the music. You're not going to get your picks in. All right, so we got Rick, then Underdog, then Grumpy, then Buggy. We're going to get you all in right off the top of the hour. Short break. We'll get you all in. And then you can hear Lee Sterling. Best wedding song ever right there. Sweet Home Alabama. No, maybe not. It's the Tom Abraham Show. The Getaway Thursday. I know. You know what I did, didn't you? Just as I was saying Thursday, you whispered in my ear 30. Sweet nothings in my ear. It's sometimes hard to talk when somebody's talking to you. I should be used to it, though. I've been doing it all my life. Back with more right after this at 730-1039. Yeah.